It's the illustrious from high above Wyoming mainstream media. Joined by Mr. Misdemeanor himself, the Saratoga Sledgehammer. Starting your day the right way on the Independence Network. It's time for the morning show with your hosts, David Iverson and Jailbird Joey.
Good morning and happy Monday to you out there in internet radio land. The morning show getting ready to kick off here on the Independence Network. Jailbird Joey in the driver's seat over the next hour, ready to bring you some things that happened over the weekend. We told you on Friday, they wait till Friday to drop some of the news, and it looks like they did. We've got a few things to discuss with Mr. David Iverson here, including, looks like it's going to get a little dark today. What do you hear about that, David?
I have heard that a little bit. I'm always interested in all things astronomy. Very cool eclipse going to happen today. Make sure you don't look at the sun without your special glasses on. I'm one of those guys that I actually have a high-priced telescope at my cabin. I've always been interested in astronomy. So for me, kind of a cool thing that's happening. Doesn't happen a whole lot. So if you've got some of those cool little glasses, go out and check it out. It's kind of a neat thing. You don't see all that often.
Point taken, and here's your counterpoint. I don't really give a damn. Me personally, all I see it is an extra 45 minutes today for the Redcoats to hide in the shadows, because now there's going to be shadows right around noon. I get it. It's a big deal. I guess this specific type of eclipse hasn't happened since Charlie Scott got elected the first time, same year there. But it's going to be 30 minutes. Yeah, it's an interesting astronomical, but basically it's everything we're against. Somebody standing between us and the light and letting us operate in the shadows.
Hey, one more cool note for all things astronomy. If you happen to be in the right place and it's clear tonight, you should also be able to see what they call the Devil Comet. I'm not exactly sure where to look in the night sky, but I've read a couple articles that say, hey, if it's clear night, which I don't think it's going to be, it's real nasty here at Cowboy State Politics headquarters, but if it's a clear night and you've got a pair of binoculars and there's no lights around, you should be able to see the comet.
That is the rumor. Little bit of overcast, some clouds throughout the day here throughout the entire state of Wyoming, so best of luck to you. I know people have traveled for this, so if you're out there, I hope you have better viewing ability than we do here in Wyoming, but looks like it's going to be another cloudy day, kind of cool. So let's warm it up for the week. We've been talking about something in between you and I over the weekend that we found interesting, disturbing, concerning, all of the above. There was a SLIB board meeting last week.
That's the state
Loans and Investment Board, and I believe within that they also have the State Council of Land Managers or something like that. But at that meeting, the SLIB board is consisting of the top five elected officials. So you have the governor, Secretary of State Gray, Treasurer Meyer, Auditor Racinus, and public instruction, Megan Dagenfelder. And they go over all the things that where the state's money's going, how the state's money's being invested, how's it doing. And they have rules of decorum, just like every other legislative meeting, even though they're not a part of the legislature. This is purely executive board here. But they had an extra member the other day.
Yeah, wasn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Just maybe there was an open seat up at the dais, or maybe it was just a more comfortable chair. You know, Augie does like to lean back and lounge around, and so maybe he just thought he wanted a comfy chair. I don't know. But regardless, he was sitting up there at the front with the top five elected representatives of the executive branch, of which Augie is not a member. But he was sat right up front with everybody. Don't know what he was doing there. I don't know. I found it kind of strange.
Well, let me make sure everyone's clear. President of the Senate, Ogden Driscoll, decided to take a seat at the dais at the front of the SLIB board meeting. And we do know what he was doing because we watched the, not only did we watch the live feed, the Zoom or Facebook or YouTube video, but I believe you were in almost constant contact with President Driscoll through Facebook.
That's true. All of the videos
playing on his phone the whole time. And apparently he was arguing with the illustrious from high above the entire meeting. And we have the Facebook feed from that. Again, we're probably not going to get into what happened at the SLIB board meeting. There was a couple of interesting things, but the fact that there's rules established and that they're just not enforced for certain people. Let me read that rule for you from the State Loan and Investment Board and State Board of Land Commissioners Policy for Decorum and Civility. You can find this online under the Wyoming Office of State Lands and Investments. Just look for the rules for decorum and you will see right there at the top, the following standards of decorum shall apply to SLIB and SBLC meetings. Number one, only board members shall be seated at the dais located at the front of the meeting room. All other meeting attendees shall be seated in the auditorium's public seating arena. The only exception to this policy is for Office of State Lands and Investment staff taking meeting minutes and the operating of the online technology to facilitate virtual meeting attendance. Staff may be seated at the tables immediately adjacent to the dais to facilitate their duties. Now, I don't hear anything in there about special seating for special guests. I don't hear anything there about there's an at-large board seat or a legislative liaison membership seat. Just if you're not a member of this board, you do not sit up here. But Augie, without anybody bringing it up, and it's the chairman's responsibility to enforce these rules, which would be Governor Gordon. So there we go. Augie just decided to take a seat at the front and literally do nothing all day. He didn't involve himself in the conversation. I mean, he was arguing with you online.
That's true. Well, I was just going to say, he was doing something. He was arguing with me on Facebook. And the, well, we're talking about it. I may as well tell you what the argument was about. There's a former appointed representative by the name of J.D. Williams, who has decided that he's going to run against Representative Alan Slagle. Now, if you remember correctly, in the last primary, Representative Slagle won that election by 12 votes. So, super close. They actually had a recount, a mandatory recount. Turns out we do have accurate elections in Niobrara, Weston, and I believe part of his district is Crook County, but not sure. But I know that there's three counties there. Maybe, I'm sure part of Campbell is in there anyway. Anyhow, so Augie had posted that, you know, J.D. Williams is a man of convictions and morals, and you really couldn't have a better choice than Representative J.D. Williams, on and on and on. So my reply was, as opposed to whom, Ogden? As opposed to Representative Slagle, who is a man of morals and convictions, and by the way, he's a father of nine. A Wyoming rancher. I've never heard the man utter a swear word, and I've been in several different meetings with him that, you know, some things got a little heated, and it would have been totally appropriate to let a swear word slip, but not Representative Slagle. So my point was, as opposed to the man who occupies the seat, and I may have made reference to that being sort of a backhanded insult against Representative Slagle. And Uggie's reply was, oh, no. I wasn't saying anything about Representative Slagle. I would never do that. You know, I was just talking about Representative Williams. Uh-huh. Whatever. But he was doing that while sitting at the dais at the SLIB board meeting. And there's one other problem with this, too. And, you know, a lot of what you see in politics is symbolic. And that's for two reasons. One, we have traditions, you know, the ways that we do things, those sorts of things. Really, I don't think those mean all that much. It's just precedence. But the other part of the symbolism is that it's a visual representation of the separation between branches. So the SLIB board is part of the executive branch. Those are the people that execute the law. So the top five elected officials, Secretary Gray, the governor, the treasurer, the auditor, and the superintendent of public instruction. Those are all in the executive branch. Augie, though he is the president of the Senate, is part of the legislative branch. And never the twain shall meet. And if you read any of Governor Gordon's veto letters, I think in every single one of them, he talks about the separation of powers. So there's a reason why only members of the SLIB board, the executive branch, can be seated at the dais. Because if you were watching that Zoom video, you would assume that the president of the Senate now has a seat on the SLIB board. And a lot of people, you know, they're not so in tune with the inner workings of Wyoming government like you and I are, Joey. I mean, we do this every day for a living. And so, you know, we recognize things like that. Well, if you're just average Joe citizen and you're bored on a on a afternoon and you have absolutely nothing to do and you just need something to lull you into a nap, you might turn on the SLIB board meeting. And if you just looked at it, you would assume President of the Senate Ogden Driscoll gets a seat on the SLIB board. So it's the symbolism is important there. The visual representation of the separation of our government is important. And then you add in there the entire time he's sitting there on his phone arguing with me and Tom Kelly. So, I mean, absolutely wrong all the way around it. It's a bad look. And, you know, I frankly, the only reason why he was in Cheyenne, perhaps, was to collect his per diem. I don't know. There may not be any other reason for it.
Yeah, let's get into that point. First thing, the thing you said, if you happen to, you know, be bored and pull up a SLIB board meeting because you don't have anything else to do, that doesn't necessarily have to happen. Because if you look at some of the news reports from the syndicate out there in Wyoming, mainstream liberal news, a lot of the pictures of what happened at the SLIB board meeting where they focused on, you know, the stories were about the Casper gravel pit, the land trade in Sheridan, which are important things. They're the actual business that happened. The pictures all include a wide shot with Augie on the dais. So that puts that symbolism that, wait a minute, this is how it's done in people's mind. And then we hear the arguments all the time. Well, this is the way we've always done it. Rules be damned. And it's not just the legislature or the government that does it. I mean, we have the same problem even in the Wyoming Republican Party, people saying, well, I thought this is the way we did it. We always did it. Well, you've been doing it wrong forever, and it doesn't matter because rules change. Otherwise, there's no point in having a legislature or a state or county convention to address your rules. You need to be up to date with what's going on in the books. But it does put that perception in people's minds. Well, I've seen it like this plenty of times before, even if that's not what you're looking at. Second thing is the point you mentioned. Was he there collecting his per diem? Because he didn't participate at all. And I would assume that he wouldn't travel one inch. Maybe he, had to get down to Costco. Well, he lives closer to Gillette than... For whatever reason, he was down there. I have no doubt that he was getting paid. I can't confirm that. I haven't pulled the finance records yet. But whether he was getting paid or not, by virtue of the fact that he was sitting up there, he was there in his official capacity. Because if he wasn't there sitting on the dais as the president of the Senate, that means anytime there's an open seat, Jailbird Joey can go and sit in that open seat, right? So we have to assume, and... they'll argue that he wasn't doing anything wrong, but he was there in his official capacity. Now, if he was there in his official capacity, whether he was getting paid or not, even worse, if he was getting paid and he's texting you and getting online and promoting a candidate for office, isn't that electioneering by a government official utilizing government personnel?
913-105, baby.
I knew you had it in your hip pocket. I don't think it's wrong for legislators to promote a candidate, to endorse a candidate. But when you're actively doing it on government time at a government event where you're supposed to be representing the people or not be there at all, in my mind, that is a violation of the statute. You're utilizing government resources and government personnel to promote a candidate, which is considered electioneering and is completely illegal. If you're at the meeting, be at the meeting. Let's just argue about why you're in the seat. But no, as usual, there's always some hook into not following the rules while breaking the law on the redcoat side.
Absolutely. And none of them really care about the rules. Well, excuse me. They care about the rules when it works in their favor. When it works against them, they could care less about them. For example, the big article that the Independence Network did about using Stith's office, or the Wyoming caucus using Stith's office for electioneering. That is clearly against that statute that I mentioned. If you want to look it up again, it's 913-105. It clearly says political or campaign activity. So, Augie was sitting in the chair at the same time that he was on Facebook going back and forth with me. And you know, isn't that amazing, Joey? You have the president of the Wyoming Senate sitting on the dais of a SLIB board meeting going back and forth with one of us. Now, a couple of thoughts about that. First of all, doesn't the president of the Senate have more important things to do than to go back and forth with me and try to justify his electioneering and endorsement of a candidate, which I want to talk about that in just a second. Don't let me forget that. But it's also interesting that we have the access that we do. And I'm not just saying that it's the Independence Network or it's cowboy state politics, but Wyoming's a small state. And in a way, it's interesting that we have the access that we do to our elected officials. The second thing I wanted to mention is, and let's go ahead and talk about this whole endorsing a candidate thing. There isn't a rule that says a sitting legislator can't endorse somebody else for an office. In fact, I think that they absolutely should. There is, however, a tradition in the Senate and the House that sitting legislators do not endorse an opponent to one of their colleagues. And it's just one of those unwritten rules. And let me give you a perfect example of this. So last year, Representative Jennings was driving around his daughter, Holly, while she was out campaigning for different various candidates. That's part of Holly's business. She does photography work and works up campaign material and stuff like that. So it's her private business. And she was just out delivering stuff. And they were riding in Mark's truck, and he was just driving around. Well, they happened to be in Cyrus Western's district over in Bighorn somewhere. And it turned into a big, giant thing that Mark Jennings was out campaigning against Cyrus Western, and he's endorsed his opponent, which none of that was true at all. It was just Mark driving around his daughter while she was at work. So there is a tradition in the legislature that you don't endorse an opponent of a sitting legislator. So here's Augie, the president of the Senate, the guy who was supposed to, and God help us if this is actually the case, but President Driscoll is supposed to represent all of the genteel traditions. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a minute, Joey. Genteel traditions.
But continuing on the traditions, it's not a sad day. This is just politics. There may have been a day and an age when there was a genteel tradition, when people drank their tea with their pinkies out, and everything was according to Hoyle.
Yeah, so there may have been a day when there was a genteel nature to the legislature. But Ogden Driscoll would be the first one who would jump on another legislator for endorsing a candidate if the person they were endorsing was running against one of Augie's pals. You see, all of these folks, they make a big deal about as Senator Kinski, that was who you just heard in that soundbite, saying that the genteel nature of the legislature, where everybody drinks their tea with their pinkies hanging out. When it suits them, those things are important. But when it doesn't fit their purposes, well, they don't really care about it. Okay, so let's go back to the SLIB board meeting. So here's Augie sitting on the dais, which is, there's not a tradition of doing that. In fact, it's against the decorum rules of the SLIB board. So you have to ask yourself, why was Augie sitting there? I don't know. Had to be a purpose, but the whole point is they only follow the rules when it suits them. And clearly that's an example of, you know, them not giving a crap about the rules.
Yeah, when it comes to the rules, the pinky is not the finger that Ogden Driscoll is pointing upwards with.
Certainly not the finger he was using with me.
Yeah. You made an interesting point, the Mark Jennings issue, or what they tried to make the Mark Jennings issue. Even if it could have been construed, and I'm sure there's redcoats out there who listen regularly, think, well, yeah, but, you know, you got to put those same rules for everybody. Okay, well, first of all, if it's the same rules for everybody, why are we the only ones giving Augie crap? Second of all, that was Mark's personal time.
Yes.
And because it was his personal time, I'm going to say Mark. There is a difference whether it's a tradition or not. The law says when you are on the dole or acting in your official capacity, there's certain things you can't do, even if it's your position. I don't know if this would go anywhere as an official complaint, but there's ample evidence that Ogden Driscoll was acting in his official capacity and electioneering at the same time. So I think there's a little bit of a difference in clarity in that. And again, we need to get away from this. Well, I always heard, well, the traditions are, if the tradition is important enough, put it on paper, make it a rule, make it a law. I hear people say the same thing about the political parties all the time. Oh, we can't endorse a candidate during the primary. Yeah, you can. You just can't. Literally, the only thing in the law that says anything about it is a political party cannot expend funds in promotion of one candidate over another if they're in the same race from the same party. So, yeah, that's fun. Well, I don't know.
Hold on. Before we move on there, let's just talk about this whole idea of traditions again. And, you know, on the one hand, they're kind of meaningless. It's just the way that we've always done them. But if you look at the Manual of Legislative Procedure, the word precedent is in, well, let me back up so I don't confuse the matter. So they have a list in the Manual of Legislative Procedure of these are the rules that we follow, or these are the manuals, how we make our decisions. And there's, I don't know, Joey, there's what, five or six different things that they list. One is the Manual of Legislative Procedure. One is Wyoming statute. And they're ranked in order. One of them is the Constitution. And somewhere in there, pretty close to the top, I think, it says precedent. So a precedent is what you've done in the past. How have you handled a given situation, you know, in years past? Our courts work on precedent, but that's a little bit different. Those are laws. These precedents are simply the way that we've always done things. So another form of rule or decorum or however we want to phrase it, decorum might be the more accurate, is Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure or Robert's Rules. So every deliberative body in the entire country, really, focuses on either A, Robert's Rules of Order, or Mason's. Now, those aren't laws. Those aren't written in stone anywhere. It's a guide. So in other words, it's a tradition. These are the ways that you handle a meeting or the way that things are done. And so if you watch the legislature at all, rarely do they do anything outside of Mason's manual. And even if they do, there's a vote. You know, there's a vote to suspend the rules, 2/3. We saw that with House Bill 125, right? They overruled the ruling of the Rules Committee or something. And so that was kind of a procedure that was sort of out of the norm. So even when the body wants to do something that's not necessarily, as Kinski would say, according to Hoyle, they can. Okay, so even Robert's Rules and Mason's Manuals, those are really just traditions of how things are done. And so if we're going to place emphasis on Mason's Manual, Robert's Rules, those things, then it is important that Augie was sitting on the dais violating the decorum rules of the slip board, though it's not actually. Now, what he was doing was against the law. That's 913.105. But actually sitting up there, it's a breach of decorum, but you're not going to find a statute that says this is punishable by 6 months in jail or a $750 fine. Okay, these are all just sort of traditions that we're talking about. And the reason why we're talking about it this morning is they only follow them when it suits their purposes. When it's something else they want to do, well, traditions be damned. And it's rules for thee and not for me.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted to focus on the content of what he was doing. the conversation he was having on Facebook with you and Tom Kelly at the time he was there, because legislative rules and Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedures don't apply in an executive branch meeting. The legislature has already, what do they keep saying? Well, we adjourn, sign, die. We're no longer in session. So all of, you know, technically you could say, hey, these are your rules. And Hill's like, well, you know, we weren't in session. We weren't in my chambers. We weren't, you know, doing this, that, and the other. But there still is that rule for decorum in the SLIB board. And none of that matters because the content of what he was doing makes it potentially a violation of the law. And that's always turned on no matter what room you're in. And it should be a legitimate expectation of the people, of regardless of whatever your traditions or precedent is, that at very least the law is considered. And that, I don't know, there's just, again, so much here. Why were you even sitting there in the first place? How much did that cost us? I'm guessing it's a minimum, the $250 a day we pay any legislator to do anything. And why, in your official capacity, were you sitting up there, which we still don't know why you were there, not involved in the conversation, not contributing anything, but instead electioneering? So really, it's got to break down to, you know, time, place, and purpose. The arguments they always use to try to rein in the Second Amendment with gun control. Oh, there's situational time, place, and means that we can limit that. Well, okay, fine. It may not necessarily be against the specific wording of your legislative policies or Mason's Manual, but definitely the spirit, the expectation, and now state law, in my mind, is being violated. And this is another one of those situations. Do I think anything will be done? Absolutely not. They'll never prosecute this. It's just those right-wing extremists making more conspiracy theories. No, it happened. It's just not going to be dealt with.
Now, that's an interesting point, and I know that we're getting way into the weeds on this, but this is, in my mind, kind of interesting. So I mentioned the Clark Stith story earlier. Well, their argument against why or for not doing anything about that is, well, you couldn't prove exactly that they were in the office at the moment that they were sending out emails, and we can't precisely prove what they were doing in there. Okay, fine. In this case, there's a YouTube video with a timestamp of Uggie sitting on the dais on his phone, which corresponds to the timestamp of the posts he made arguing with me. And that is very clearly, I mean, they were in the Capitol building. He was sitting on the dais. There's posts on Facebook that were clearly political. And so he was using the Capitol building for electioneering, and it's absolutely provable. And it's out there for all to see.
It was the brand new multi-million-dollar state building down in Casper across the street from Harshman Memorial Stadium.
I thought it was in Cheyenne, but it was still in the Tyra office building.
Yeah, that's where they were at, Minor Point. But again, we like to be accurate here because that's what they'll focus on. Anything comes up, we weren't even in the Capitol building, and they'll just dismiss the whole thing. But I absolutely agree. And more than that, the testimony of you and Tom in an affidavit can say, hey, as I was watching the meeting and texting back and forth with Ogden Driscoll, everything was in the same time. And they'll argue the technicality. It's the same thing you talk about when these mailers come out. They'll never argue the substance of what's being said. They'll always argue these loophole technicalities. And this does kind of go back to the illegal mailers. You know, that's going to be part of the argument of, well, you know, technically this wasn't happening and I really wasn't electioneering, and the filing period hasn't even opened yet, so these aren't even really candidates yet. They'll never go and defend the action that's actually of concern, though.
Right.
It's all that sleight of hand stuff that they constantly do.
It's more than that, Joey. It's rules for thee, but not for me. Now, I can guarantee you, if you and I were either in the Thyra office building or if we were in the Wyoming Capitol, if we took one step out of line, and they tried to do it to you with your high-capacity assault microphone, they actually tried to create a rule saying that you couldn't use that microphone in the Senate chamber, which is just ridiculous anyway. But my point is that if you or I took one step outside of their prescribed rules, not even statute, but their rules of the legislature, Well, they'd do everything they could to get us kicked out of the building. In fact, I heard from a very credible source. You know, it's one of these Cowboys, you know, sources have told Cowboys state politics things. But I heard from a very credible source that someone at the Cowpie was saying that I got kicked out of the Capitol building simply because there was a complaint made about me to the Wyoming Highway Patrol in the Capitol building. So my point is that if anybody but them steps anywhere outside of the lines, well, then they come down like a ton of bricks. But when the rules don't suit them, then, you know, it doesn't matter. They'll find every technicality they can to get around it, like you said. Let me give you a great example here. And again, this goes along with our point, rules for thee, but not for me. So a couple of years ago, we had a special session about COVID stuff, okay, vaccine mandates and all of that. And Nancy Case, again, attempted Medicaid expansion during the special session, okay? Now, I mean, he tried to make a tenuous argument that these people had to have health care coverage because of COVID and all of this, but, you know, really didn't have anything to do with COVID. So after the special session, there was a committee meeting in which former Senator Tom James objected to Senator Case bringing Medicaid expansion again because the special session technically is part of the upcoming session, because you've already, like you said, you've already adjourned sine die from the previous session. So that means that one's over. They have the special session, and then the following spring or the following year, they have their legislative session. So that 2021 and 2022, those two sessions were connected. So in the soundbite that you're going to hear, it's Senator Tom James and Nancy Case arguing back and forth about whether or not he can even bring the bill. And just listen to how it, I mean, it's kind of long, and Senator James, he has a lot of pauses when he talks. So anyway, just listen to this. Rules for thee, but not for me.
Senator James.
Mr. Chairman, I think limiting people that we represent is not very representative of who we represent.
Okay, so it starts out, and I forgot about this part, but it starts out, Senator Case was trying to limit public testimony. And they do that a lot. Nancy Case is one of them. Steve Harshman's one of them. But they try to make it so that the public can't testify on a given piece of legislation. And the way that this was going down in the committee is there wasn't a lot of support for Medicaid expansion, and Kale Case was trying to shut it down. But anyway, let's continue here.
I don't think that's right in any way, shape, or form.
Fair enough.
So, you know, allowing agencies to unlimited time and then limiting our voters, it's not kosher. So I don't think we should do that.
Senator James, we haven't heard from anybody yet. I think we'll have public testimony, 1 minute apiece. If there's any subsequent motions that people want to make, that's fine. But as this bill stands right now, it's going to be introduced in the special session. Okay. Who would like to start the public testimony in this room?
One more comment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator James.
If I'm not mistaken, when this was introduced in the Senate and there was a vote, we did have a debate on it. So, and we can pull it up on YouTube and look at it. It was quite a debate. So,
Senator James,
I'm not quite sure what you're talking about, how there was no discussion on it in the Senate. So,
Senator James, this committee passed a motion to allow this bill to be.
It is a very biased.
Senator James.
Because you have two people on here that were sponsored that bill, and the rest of them voted aye on it in the previous.
Senator James,
so
we just had a motion to table.
Biased.
Senator James.
Motion.
Senator James. We're going to have 1 minute of testimony from people on the bill. If you want to make a subsequent motion, you're welcome to try. The committee's will was expressed in May, and it was clear that it was to be in the available session. The special session, Senator James.
We did have.
Senator James, the special session.
We did have a debate during the special session.
Senator James.
It was an or. It should not be during the budget session.
I think it's a misinterpretation of the word or.
So a perfect example of, well, we'll follow the rules when it suits our purposes. But if there's something else we want to do, well, then, you know, damn the torpedoes. We don't need to worry about those stinking rules. We don't need no stinking instructions.
Oh, Nancy, Nancy, Nancy. And, you know, going back to Kinski's statement, it doesn't look like it was their pinkies that were extended during that conversation. No. You know, everyone's like, oh, you're always you're making jokes. Yeah, but it happens all the time. You know, these genteel traditions thrown out the window. As soon as Nancy Case is challenged, he goes into full on, you know, wife beating bully mode. Not that he beats his wife, but, you know, that's the posture that he's taking. I'm going to bark you down. And I'm pretty sure that if it wasn't public meeting and they weren't senators on, you know, their official time, it probably would have gone further than that. This happened actually a lot with Tom James. Remember, in the same year, Ogden Driscoll himself walked by and shoulder checked Tom James. So there is a lot of bullying to the point of, again, violating the law. Now, I don't think Kale Case necessarily violated the law in that exchange, but the criminal code definitely has a subject for unlawful contact, even if it's not, you know, physical battery. You're not punching somebody. And, it was just an accident. There's a, you know, it's a tight aisle. I mean, that's the widest aisle in the room. Now, I get it. At the time, Ogden Driscoll was the whitest senator in the room, but he didn't have to lean in and drop a shoulder check. And that's what it turns into. And we have, you know, an onslaught of op-eds lately about civility and decorum and decency and how we treat each other, and our fellow legislators must be treated with respect regardless of how much we disagree with them. But the most egregious examples of rules for me, not for thee, I'm going to disrespect and demean you as a human being and treat you like you're beneath me and that your constituents that you're representing or even your point that you're bringing up doesn't matter, is always perpetrated by the redcoat side. First and most intensely, you know, they point out, oh, Anthony Bouchard, he's a meanie. Well, you know, at least it's not confirmed and recorded and he's out in the hall possibly doing this thing you said. We still really don't know. But you guys do it right up there on Front Street, which is why it's not a problem that I'm not allowed to have my high capacity assault microphones. You guys give us everything we need. We don't need to deal the extra stuff. But yeah, another example of, you know, twisting it, finding loopholes. I love the posture of, well, you know, it could be interpreted the other way. I think you're misinterpreting the meaning of the word or.
It's a misinterpretation of the word or.
Well, now we have the audio clip, or for a few years we've had this audio clip. Well, Kale Case, now we know how you interpret that word, so that is precedent, right?
Exactly right. But again, you know, it's another example of, well, this, I want to do X, Y, or Z. I know the rules say that I can't, but you know, we'll find some way to make it work. But if it were you or I, and this, a good example of this, is there's a lot of things, like every legislative session, there are things that happen, and Wyoming citizens write complaints. You know, everything is on YouTube now, so there's a lot of people that are just watching this, and they're like, hey, that looks wrong to me. And so they sit down at their computer and write out a complaint. If you don't have the correct form, if you don't send it in the correct way, if you just type out the letter and print it and you don't sign it, they won't even consider your complaint. And so even when the people that are the bosses of all of these legislators say, hey, man, what are you doing here? And they take the time to write out a complaint, print it, put it in an envelope, take it down to the post office, send it to Cheyenne. There's always a technicality that they get away with. I mean, there have been lots of examples, and we should probably go back to Dan Zwanitzer. That's probably the perfect example. Joey, you and I had that guy dead to rights on voter fraud and not living in his district. I mean, any way you looked at that argument, there was a piece of evidence saying you violated the law. And yet, because it wasn't in their precedent and you know, the exact way that they do things, Dan Zwanitzer skated on the whole thing. So again, it's rules for thee, but not for me. And, you know, now, and you brought up, I think I know where you're going with this, There's been a lot of op-eds recently that, well, you know, it's, we got to get back to civility. You know, when I was in the legislature, things were civil, and we stuck our one of our fingers out while we were drinking tea, and the genteel nature of the Senate. In fact, there was an op-ed that came out, I think it was over the weekend, former Senator Ray Peterson. And I think you probably have some interesting comments on this, so I'll let you lead this discussion, Joey.
Yeah, there's a lot in there. It pretty much follows the standard tempo of what we've seen from Tom Lubnow, a couple of these other former legislators, a couple former legislators' wives. We get a lot from the stubby crew, Amy Edmonds, whatever her name is down there in Casper, the Liz Cheney lovers. That's who you're seeing a lot of these op-eds from, and they all focus around this central theme of, if you weren't born here and you don't have 15 generations here and you haven't served in the past and you don't follow the good old boy club rules, then you're wrong. And we're going to continue to point out that you have no business doing business in Wyoming, especially in the legislature. And this one from former Senator Peterson, the thing that jumped out at me first was when he starts to snipe at the people that supported the special session but didn't get their work done in the legislature. He doesn't say, maybe earlier he says something about Freedom Caucus, but he's pointing at the conservatives in the Freedom Caucus. And he says, quote, some may think that it's time we stood our ground and dig in if we are to save our values. Sadly, the result of standing your ground is that nothing moves while the dead bodies continue to stack up, much like the trench warfare of World War I. A great example of the futile exercise, when both parties are dug in and unwilling to move, the dead bodies will begin to stack up with little or no positive movement or effect. I would point out to the reader that the attitude of these so-called true Republicans, the Freedom Caucus, have set themselves up as the judge of who is a good Republican and who is not. It is nothing more than a mob mentality. For a glimpse of the end game of this movement could be provided by a study of the extreme party in Germany that began much the same way.
So we're all Nazis now?
That's exactly what I'm pointing out. He won't use the word Nazi. He spends four paragraphs driving around and making a circle around the word Nazi in an op-ed where he's calling for civility and decorum. It's another one of those embedded examples of hypocrisy and contradiction within a single statement. I consider an op-ed a fully developed statement if it's written properly. And we see this all the time. And it's one of the things I point out. I sound repetitious, but I can't stop these people from doing it over and over again. It is that elitist mentality of take what I'm saying and do it the way I'm saying it. The rules for me, not for thee. And if you see a contradiction here, then I will either explain to you what I mean or basically lie to you or explain to you that I think you're too dumb to actually understand what I'm trying to say. A lot of these elitists are very dismissive of the people. They take legitimate concerns all the time, and like you said, either find a loophole, a sidetrack, or in most cases, they're just dismissive. They're, oh, well, you know, I could explain it to you, but I'm not sure you'd really get it. You haven't been here for 500 generations. You've never served in the legislature. But it keeps bringing me back to my same original point of, you think I'm stupid. You think I'm not Wyoming enough, but in the end, you still want my vote. No, not going to happen. You're not representing my voice. I'm not going to let you represent my district. That's it. Bottom line up front. Now, I don't know what else you saw in that op-ed, but that was the first thing that jumped out.
Man, there was a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, no name calling, but you guys are Nazis.
Well, it's okay. So this is one of those things where I mean, everybody can see hypocrisy when it rears its ugly head. But unless you pay close attention to Wyoming politics, like Joey and I do, it's easy to forget things that happened. And the first thing that came to my mind was the Frontier Republicans. So, and Joey, you were pretty involved in the party at the time the Frontier Republicans showed up. But essentially, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but what happened is the conservatives took over the party. There was a bunch of people that got more involved, and we got the votes in the state central committee, and we took over the party. Well, there was this group, and it was the Joe McGinleys and Doug Chamberlain and Gail Simmons and several others. They start what they call the Frontier Republicans. And one of their main things was, well, we have to be civil. You know, these ruffians that came in and took over our party, you know, they're just incivil, and we have to get back to being civil, which what they really mean is do it our way. So they held a meeting down in Cheyenne during the legislative session, and I call it their coming out party. And you can infer anything else, anything that you want from that statement, because I think it's applicable. But in their coming out party, they talk a lot about civility. And in the very next breath, Joe McGinley gets up and he calls all of us cockroaches.
The cucarachas.
So that was the first thing that came to my mind is, you know, you have to be civil, but we can call you cockroaches, or we can call you Nazis, which is what Ray Peterson is saying. And it's, again, rules for thee, but not for me.
Yeah, I would say go ahead and definitely read up on all this stuff, but take it with a grain of salt and look at the multiple contradictions within a single op-ed or article. I always look for the gaps, see what's missing, especially when it comes to the mainstream media. There's normally a lot of holes, things they don't explain, they'll mention, and you'll take it for what you think it is. They'll use a tagline, but they won't explain what they're talking about. It's called seeding disinformation is what they call that. Another interesting thing in this article was something about we're expected to just kiss the ring and suck up to leadership and blah, 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 blah.
That's exactly what happens.
And yeah, it not only is it's what's been happening, but it's what's been happening with a certain part of that divide that's pointed out in this op-ed. But at the same time, he defends Governor Gordon and saying, well, you know, obviously Governor Gordon knew why he vetoed those certain bills. And
they were poorly written, poorly crafted. Yeah, that's why they went through the legislature pretty much untouched. House Bill 125.
Exactly. And that he would have taken the time to understand that there might be some political fallout, but he would have never vetoed a good bill just because it was his own personal agenda to do so. I'm calling BS on that, but that he exercised his constitutional authority to check and balance our government by making those vetoes. I'm like, well, what about the constitutional authority to override vetoes? So really, if you take different parts and look at it in its entirety, it's another op-ed from a goofball that just wants to sound smarter than everybody and put the little people like us under his elitist thumb and affect the outcome of the upcoming elections. And even specifically mentions in there that people are afraid of getting passed over for leadership positions. Well, no. Wait a minute. You don't get passed over for leadership positions. You just mentioned kissing the ring. And if you could get passed over for leadership positions, kissing the ring would be part of it. The governor or the current leadership would elect the future leadership of the legislature. That's not how it happens. He knows damn good and well, leadership positions are all based on the outcomes of the primary election and what the balance in that divide is going to be in the legislature, because leaders are picked by the people. If you can get passed over, and this is where he shows his bias and his hypocrisy. If you can get passed over for a leadership position, that means it's assumed that you're going to get one.
Exactly.
That you've been in the right position long enough. You've done the right things long enough. And that one is yours. And if you don't act the right way, you're not going to get your leadership position. Hey, bro, that's not how it works. Are we a citizen legislature with a representative republic or not? It's all based on the people's vote. And he knows that. And he's another one of those individuals trying to push the onus back to that traditional red coat, multi-generational, good old boy club representation that we've seen pretty much dying the last 6-7 years here in Wyoming. And he knows it's on its way out. It's the death rattle.
Okay. So, yeah, I agree with that. But in the way that we do things at the Independence Network, we just don't make claims and accept you to and hope that you believe them or expect you to believe them. We come with facts and data. So first and always, I tell you to consider the source. Whenever you read one of these things, consider who is telling you this. And in this case, it is former state senator Ray Peterson. Well, who is Ray Peterson? Well, he is one of the people that agrees with Ogden Driscoll, and I'm going to prove this statement here in just a second. But he is one of the people that Ogden Driscoll is referring to in this soundbite.
You are one of us. Okay. You're not an outside group.
All right. So that was from a committee, a corporations committee meeting in 2021, where they were berating now Majority Floor Leader Chip Nyman for asking them to sign on to literally sign on to election integrity measures. I think it was the runoff bill. Well, Ray Peterson is totally one of these insiders. He was in the state Senate from 2007 until 2013, 2007 or 2008. And there's this cool thing on wildledge.gov where you can look up former legislators. And it you can go through all the legislation that they sponsored and didn't sponsor. So I went back this morning and looked up former state senator Ray Peterson. Now, he's got a lot of good-sounding bills, but if you click on any of them and read the bill, it is all of this feel-good stuff, let's take care of our buddies type of crap. Let me give you an example. He co-sponsored a House Bill 191 in 2011. Now, this one's interesting because it's supposed to be a tax on wind generation, which, I don't know, you and I can debate taxing the wind for a while. I don't know how I feel about it. But this one, it's the title of the bill is Wind Power Taxation. So you would think that it would be, well, let's make all the taxes equal on all energy producers. That's something that most Wyoming citizens would agree with, right? It doesn't matter where you're generating your electricity. We tax electricity in Wyoming. The coal companies get hit pretty hard with it. Oil and gas, all of them. So we should probably include wind. And if you just looked at the title of this bill, you would assume that that's exactly what this is. But it's not. Let's see here. Where is it? If you read into the bill, it says that it only applies to the generation of electricity. It does not apply to any of the equipment or anything used to construct it. So, in other words, we're not going to tax wind generation and give any of that money to local municipalities. Why do I say that? Because of property taxes. Most counties get, and if you live in an oil and gas county, you get a lot of property taxes from oil and gas on their pipelines, their equipment, their valves, their everything that goes into their gathering systems. There's a lot of money that's generated there. But Ray Peterson's bill here only deals with the taxation of the generation of that power. It doesn't deal with constructing it or the equipment or anything like that. And if you read through it, he does add a tax to wind generation, but it's all the way out to 2032. This bill was written in 2011. And even, let's see here, even this year, the bill says, 75 cents for generation, and he's saying he's taxing it per kilowatt hour. But subsection 3 of, or Romanette number 3 of subsection B, says 75 cents for generation occurring in the calendar year 2022 to year 2026. And then it goes out to 2031 and 2032. So he's legislating years in the future. And if you listen to any of Ray Peterson and his colleagues, his cohorts, arguments on the floor, they'll say, well, you can't obligate future legislatures. So my point in all of this, and I know that it's kind of technical, but there's a lot of bills that Ray Peterson co-sponsored that are just like this one, that have a good title, leads you to believe one thing, does exactly the opposite. Ray Peterson really is one of those entrenched, or was one of those entrenched establishment Republicans. And if you read that op-ed, you can clearly tell that he is one of the redcoats. He hates the Freedom Caucus, which means he hates you. Thinks you're a bunch of Nazis, that you're right-wing extremists. But again, do your research into these people. That tool that I mentioned on WildLedge, it's super, super handy, and you can go back and see exactly what a lot of what Ray Peterson did. He is not a conservative. There's a reason why when I pulled up the op-ed on the Cowpie, there was a big giant banner of the Wyoming caucus right in the middle of it. So again, consider the source on all of these op-eds. You know, this guy's writing bills that they say one thing and they do another, which is a clear red coat tactic. It's what they all do.
Absolutely. We say it probably not enough and endlessly at the same time. Know that you know. Do your homework. Don't take their word for it. Don't take our word for it. We're not sitting here saying, believe us, we know what we're talking about. We're saying, here's a concern. There is evidence out there. Do your own homework. Definitely don't take our word for it, but that's kind of one of the keys that you'll find when dealing with people in the media and in politics, in the legislature. If they just want you to take their word for it and don't give you any other resources, go ahead and look it up. It's right here, or do some research and get back to me. Then they got a problem. That's a standard we run with pretty solid here at the Independence Network. Please don't ever be in a debate, a discussion, an argument and say, well, David Iverson said so. And definitely, I mean, just think about it. If you're standing in front of a judge asking you why you did what you did and you say, well, Joey said it was a good idea. Who's Joey? Oh, you know, Jailbird Joey. Well, now you know where you're going. Know that you know. Do that homework and be willing to have conversations. Sometimes we read things and they're just, they hit us a certain way and we run off on a rabbit trail on certain information. And you got to consider the full body. This is why I like to look at these op-eds from way back and say, wait a minute, up here you say this and down here you say this. So absolutely educate yourself. Challenge what they believe the elitist authority is. Challenge us. I love getting your emails and having all your questions, and I'm more than happy to explain things in detail. And we point you to where you can find the information to make your own decision. But don't take a has-been that never was his word for it. I bet you if you look up Senate File 104, you'll see Ray Peterson's name in there somewhere.
Well, another one that he sponsored was, what year was Senate File 104? And I'll go look it up.
I have no idea. We have to prep for that.
Anyway.
Well, I'm sure every year Senate File 104 came up, but the one we're talking about where they tried to strip the superintendent of public instruction of their constitutional authorities, that one went all the way through a court case to the Wyoming Supreme Court and ultimately was overturned. But I think that was, what, 2016?
Do you remember who the prime sponsor on it was?
I don't know if David Northrup was the prime sponsor because he was in the House, but I know he was the prime proponent of it. Again,
we'll look it up and we'll tell you later.
Probably not going to get to it this show.
Another one of the bills that Ray Peterson sponsored, I believe it was in 2015. There's a Convention of States bill. There's all sorts of red coat stuff on this guy's record. But again, go look it up for yourself. Read the bills. Don't just read the tagline, because in classic red coat faction, this guy says one thing and does another, which I guess that's kind of the main point of today's morning show, is that these people say one thing, oh, we have to be civil. And then in the very next paragraph, they call us all a bunch of Nazis. They go down to Cheyenne and hold meetings and say, we have to be civil. And then in the very next speech, they call us all cockroaches. So the very people who are saying, you know, calling for civility, they're the same people that, given the opportunity, they'll sit on the dais at the SLIB board meeting and say, well, you know, this former legislator, he's a man of morals and convictions, as opposed to the guy that's already in the seat. What problem do you have with that representative? You know, that is the whole reason. One of the big reasons why I started my program is to show you that these people are a bunch of liars, that they'll say one thing and do another. They'll stand on your doorstep, tell you one thing, go to Cheyenne, do exactly the opposite. That's why they're a bunch of redcoats, man. I mean, that's the most descriptive term that I can ever apply to them. And, I mean, it fits perfectly with all of these people, including Ray Peterson, Ogden Driscoll, Senator Slithers. That's Tara Nethercott, by the way. And I did grab that soundbite, too. Before we go, if you want to know why I call her Senator Slithers, listen to this.
Senator French, that's currently the law now. In order to attend public school, you must be immunized.
It makes my skin crawl every time I hear it, man. Immunized. But that's why she got the name Senator Slithers. It sounds like the snake off of the Jungle Book. Trust in me. I don't know. Something crazy to end the show with, I guess.
Yeah, and if Ogden Driscoll likes men of conviction, then he should love me a whole lot more because, well, it's Jailbird Joey. I've got plenty of convictions. Finishing up the day here on the morning show with my good friend, the illustrious from high above, David Iverson. We're going to have a pretty busy day today, so we'll catch up with more live content tomorrow. Plenty of stuff on the list to get to the rest of this week, so stay tuned into the Independence Network. Thanks for listening to The Morning Show, and make sure you're checking out The Hair Affair with Christine today at 1 p.m. right here on the Independence Network.
Are you tired of the liberal Wyoming mainstream media constantly lying to you? Yeah, we are too. That's why we made the Independence Network. We are Wyoming's first and only internet radio, focused on one thing, bringing you facts, something that the mainstream media has no idea about.